Anybody have any questions before we launch back into selection? I will, by the way, have a new homework assignment later this afternoon posted to the website. And you all have a homework assignment underway that's due tomorrow at the end of the day. Yeah?
So for the homework two, the second question, do you expect us to give the actual number, the ratio, after 5 to 15, 20 generations, or the formula is fine?
I think that I gave you starting frequencies, right?
Yeah.
I think I'm expecting numbers. But if you find it hard to compute, you can leave the numbers as this times that over that. You know, you could leave it as a, give the expression for the number with the numbers in it, and you don't have to multiply it out. That's mainly, we don't have in-class exams. I do that policy for in-class exams, but I think, I want numbers. Okay, because the numbers show you something about what happens to those frequencies. Okay, other questiony kinds of things. So we'll have another assignment coming, and you're working on number two, and number three will be assigned later today and due a week from today. So we've had a couple more people arrive. I was giving back homeworks.
And your last name is?
I didn't turn in my homework.
You didn't turn in your. That's funny because I got homework from everybody. This is homework number one.
I'm just
homework number
sitting.
One. Sorry?
I'm just sitting in the class.
Oh, you're sitting in. Okay, and you didn't turn in it for it.
I was wondering how come I got homework from everyone and you didn't turn it in. Okay, that explains it. All right. So, last time I was giving an extended apologia for why we can use, why it might be reasonable to not just think in terms of absolute fitnesses, that exactly what, which are in a simple discrete generation's life cycle, you take the probability of survival times the expected number of offspring in a simple clonal reproduction or a one locus haploid case. That, of course, goes up and down as there is density dependence and as the population size is large or small relative to resources. But that if you were willing to assume, and it is an assumption, that population density regulation, depressing survival and depressing reproduction or increasing it, has and falls equally on all genotypes, that it's not in any way interacting with whatever this locus does. If you're willing to assume that, then you get the fact that the changes of gene frequency as expressed by get the notation right here. The frequency of one allele over the frequency of the other, the ratio of them, depends upon the relative fitnesses of the two genotypes. It depends on their ratio. It doesn't depend on their absolute values. So by focusing on the frequencies and not on the population size, we can actually get some regular results, nice results, for how the frequencies change, which becomes independent of whether the population size has gotten very big or not so big and how high it is relative to resources. So we factored out ecology from genetics in that case. And that case is a reasonably likely case, because many genes will do something like kill you when you're young before this whole issue of population size regulation acts. And maybe once you if it's plausible that once you survive this young period, then you get acted on just like everybody else. And so this fact of being able to separate
absolute effects on absolute on population size from gene frequency becomes important. So the other thing that might be said is that you might say, well, those are called relative fitnesses. What are they actually? And the answer is, what you can do, all that matters is the ratio of the fitnesses to each other, in this case, two fitnesses with more alleles, more fitnesses, with diploidy, even more fitnesses. You can basically pick any genotype you want and make it the standard. You could even make some mixture of genotypes the standard. So, for example, we could say that all we care about is the ratio of the fitness of big A to little a. So we could take, let's say, little a and say, well, let that fitness be called 1. Then the fitness of this is measured relative to that. So we might say this is, for example, 1 plus something to 1. Okay. Now, it doesn't matter whether you pick big A or little a, or it could be that big A is the standard, and they'll call that 1, and then little a, if it had a lower fitness, would be 1 minus s or something. So we get some flexibility as to where what we call the standard, and that's okay because all that comes into the expression is the ratios of these things, and therefore what when you choose as the standard doesn't matter, doesn't make any difference. And it's also convenient sometimes to use an expression like this in which you have instead of a letter for the fitness itself, you have a letter for its departure from the standard, up or down. And that's called a selection coefficient. And it has the nice property that when there is no selection, when all of the fitnesses, the relative fitnesses, are equal, then S is 0. Okay, so we'll see a lot of use of these. And in that case, of course, this ratio thing would look like this. The new ratio of gene frequencies of the old one times the ratio of these to each other. I keep using different script here. 1 plus S. Okay. And you can. I'm going to hold off on extending it out many generations into the future because we're going to come back and do that after we've looked at some cases where we have diploidy, for example, which is one of the places that we're headed. Now, it's useful to rewrite this in some other ways. First of all, this is the ratio of the two to each other. But what about the formula for the P sub A itself? Well, if I know in this generation what the ratio is, suppose that ratio is X, I'll just make a letter for it, and suppose I take the fact that we have two alleles, so the P sub little a I'm going to write as 1 minus P sub big A. So I'm reducing down to one variable for the gene frequency because the frequency of the two alleles have to add up to 1. If I take that and I say, okay, let's solve for P sub A, I claim that if you multiply through, let me do the steps, but if I multiply through by 1 minus PA, it's X times 1 minus P sub big A equals P sub big A. Now, we're back in high school or even middle school. X minus XPA equals PA. Move that over to the other side. We're trying to get all the PAs in one side. PA times 1 plus X. Divide through by 1 plus x. X over 1 plus x equals p. So whatever the ratio is of those two alleles to each other, call that x, the gene frequency of big A is x over 1 plus x, trivially. So if we take this expression here, let us take this one and say that's the ratio in the next generation. What's the gene frequency in the next generation? It's equal to that ratio, P big A over P little a times 1 plus S, over itself,
plus one. Now that looks complicated, but you can look through and say, well, look, let's multiply through by the denominator of by p. We'll multiply by p little a over p little a. That gets rid of this one, so it's p big A times 1 plus s over, well, we're going to multiply the p little a through here. It gets rid of the denominator of this, but it multiplies on to the 1. Okay, so, or you could there say 1 minus p big A. It wouldn't make any difference. Let me do that. Okay, so there's an expression for the gene frequency of the next generation. And there's a general form of it that holds for lots, not just for this parameterization of 1 plus s to 1, but also gives you some more insight. 1 plus s, you'll recall, is the relative fitness of big A. So little w of big A. And then this denominator, so we're sort of going back to the script W's. Well, but what is this denominator? Okay, let's look at that denominator. It's PA, the frequency of big A times something, plus 1 minus PA times something. Now, the population consists of a fraction of individuals who are big A and a fraction who are little a. So if we think about that population, this looks like a weighted average of something. If I go into the population, pick an individual, and I say, tell me, what's your genotype's fitness? And it tells me either 1 plus s if it's a big A, or if it happens to be a little a, it says 1. Okay. And if I collect a lot of those, draw lots of individuals from the population, and get those numbers, what's the average number that I will get? That average number will be the average relative fitness of individuals in the population. Well, a fraction p of the time, it'll be 1 plus s, and a fraction 1 minus p of the time, it'll be 1. So I want to argue that what this thing in the denominator is, it's really important, is what I'm going to call double little w with a bar over it, which is an antique notation for average. In physics, they put brackets around it in certain physics notations instead of a bar over it. So then you look at it, it has a very simple form. It says, look, the new gene frequency, maybe I'll call it P big A here, the new gene frequency, just the old gene frequency, times a ratio. And what that ratio is the mean fit, it's the fitness of big A's over the average fitness of everybody. So it's a multiplier giving you the what multiple of the average population fitness is the fitness of big A's. That, of course, depends on how many big A's, what fraction of the population are big A's. So this form is very easy to remember. If you're going to memorize one of these formulas, that's the one to memorize, because you can kind of work out everything else from it. One of the things you can do is work out the change of gene, a formula for the change of gene frequency. The change of gene frequency will be p, the new value of p sub big A, minus the old value. And we just do a little algebra here. It's p big A w of big A, these w's being relative fitnesses, over w bar minus p big A. And then you can multiply through, you can say p big A, w big A, minus p big A times w bar all over w bar. In other words, I've put a w bar over w bar, multiplied that by the right-hand p big A here, and it becomes that, and then you quickly factor. And this thing you can call also the change of p big A, the delta of p big A, the change of in one generation, it's equal to p big A times the fitness of big A's minus the mean fitness scaled by the mean fitness. So how much bigger is big A fitness than the average population fitness as a fraction of the average population fitness. Okay. There's another form of it that's also can be worked out from this, and that is where we go to here, to this upper right formula here, and we replace W bar. Note that W bar is P big A times W big A plus, let's see if I get this right, make it 1 minus P big A times the W for little a. Okay, that's the simple, one of the simple expressions for mean fitness. And I stick that in, and I get, this is again for the change of gene frequency, P big A, W big A, minus P big A, times, if I got this right, P big A, W big A, plus 1 minus P big A, W little a. Yeah, it's going to work out. It looks horrible. The denominator I'm just going to leave as W bar. I'm not going to write out the expression for it because we won't really gain anything down there. Look and say, well, that looks ugly. But we notice a couple things. If you collect everything in WA, you'll find P big A minus P big A squared times WA plus P big A times 1 minus P big A times W little a, all over W bar. Then you might look at this first thing, P big A times 1 minus P big A squared. Well, everybody's got a P big A in it. We actually multiplied it in, but it could be left out. That's equal to P big A times 1 minus P big A, and so is this. So you can bring it out front, and then you get this nice form, which just says, well, what's the change of gene frequency? The answer, it's the frequency of big A times the frequency of the other allele, product of the frequencies of the two alleles, times what? Well, it's times the difference between the relative fitnesses of big A and little a, and then all scaled by W bar. So one of the things that shows you is that as you get near 0 or 1 in gene frequency, this thing out front is going to go towards 0. When P big A is 0, when you have no big A's around, the change is 0. Well, that's reasonable. I mean, there aren't any big A's in the population. Their frequency can't change because we don't have any mutation here or anybody bringing in genes from outside by migration. Likewise, when big A is completely the only allele in the population, all the little a's are gone, then this 1 minus P big A thing goes to 0, and there's no change. So again, no little a's around, there's no change either. And that's entirely reasonable. You can sort of see the change, the speed of change of gene frequency dying away as you get to the end of the axis. Yes, please.
So I'm having a little bit of a hard time thinking about like what average fitness would be. So like the number of offspring that survive regardless of like genetics? Is that what? So like, you know, 20 die every year regardless of anything. Is that what?
No. Okay. Because you're thinking in terms of absolute fitnesses, as you're being realistic and ecological.
Oh, okay.
That's dangerous. What you want to do, what we've done by assuming that population density regulation falls equally on everybody, we've got rid of ecology. So what we're now doing is thinking of fitnesses as compared to some standard, like 1.
Mm-hmm.
So the mean fitness, if S were 0 so that they're equal, or if everybody is a little a, the mean fitness will be just 1. Now, that doesn't mean that the population is exactly reproducing itself, because this is relative fitness.
Okay.
So it's relative to what little a is doing, which might be increasing, it might be decreasing due to the ecology. That doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's sort of how much is the average fitness relative to the fitness of a little a?
So then I'm
I just don't understand then why we have both the average fitness and the difference between the two fitnesses. Because it feels like then the average fitness takes into account the ratio already, right?
Yes, and these take into account their ratio also, because they're defined relative to
each other.
Each other, relative to one of them, which is usually relative to one of them, which is chosen as a standard.
So if you have it being taken into consideration on the denominator and in the top, how do they not cancel out?
Well, what happens is, I can write this out a little more. This is the same numerator divided by, well, we'll put the expression there, PA, W, big A, plus 1 minus PA, W, little a. That's really what's going on down there. We're not expanding it because it doesn't give us much else. They don't cancel because they don't cancel. I mean... Let me write them in terms of this selection coefficient S, and then it might be, because that's another thing that we need to do. Maybe I can do it in here somehow. Let's consider this case of 1 plus S to 1. Now, S could be positive, or it could be negative. If S is minus 1, then this is a lethal. Then big A is lethal or sterile, or both. But S is the thing that will tell you how different they are. If I put it in here, the change of gene frequency is this P big A times 1 minus P big A times, well, this minus that, that's S. So S will be right here. And in the denominator, what will it be? Well, it'll be P big A times 1 plus S plus 1 minus P big A times 1. Does that look reasonable? I mean, and you can make that a little simpler in the denominator. Let's put the S out front here just to make it look a little more dramatic. This here is P big A times 1 plus 1 minus P big A times 1. Well, that's 1 times 1. So I claim it to be equal to 1 plus S P big A. So it's a number that's 1, but it's a little bit greater than 1 by S, but only to the extent that there are big A's around. So if there's a lot of big A's around, if P big A if P big A is nearly 1, so almost everybody's a big A, then this is nearly 1 plus S in the denominator. If P big A is very small, then it's nearly 1 in the denominator. Does that give you a little bit more feel for that denominator and why it doesn't cancel?
Can you say that it doesn't?
It doesn't cancel this S. This thing here is turned into this S.
Can you say it doesn't cancel because you're looking at the fitness?
The little a part isn't the same.
Yeah.
And what it is that if almost everyone is a little a, so there's very few big a's, this is almost S to 1. This over this is almost S over 1. But if almost everybody is a big A, this is S over 1 plus S, which is not, you know, not quite
so
the same.
So if PA was 0, wouldn't it be?
P big A was zero.
This would turn into zero, right? On the top?
On the top would be zero. The bottom would be one.
So
this is another zero. Well, this isn't the zero. S is not zero, but P big A is zero. So the numerator is zero, the denominator is nearly one. So it's zero then, there's no
and
change.
That makes sense because the change in PA, there wouldn't be a change in PA.
You can't create big A's by selecting for them when they're not there in the first place.
Okay.
You know, that's, yeah.
So those are some of the formulas that you get for one generation of change in a haploid case. Where I want to go from this is, I want to go straight to the... In the book, by the way, there's, for those who are into the math of theoretical population genetics, section 2.3 is all about how you formulate a continuous a population where instead of a discrete generation's life cycle, there's continuous change with individuals continually being replaced. And then you get differential equations, and you get somewhat different quantities. You have to use birth and death rates, and you've got a thing called the Malthusian parameter. I don't know that I call it that there.
Would this be more like just looking at an instantaneous
person? Instantaneous who?
Like, you're saying that in section 2.3,
yeah.
See how there's a population would be, the changes would be modeled over time with continuous.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a continuous time. It's a different life cycle. It's the life cycle we're working here is kind of annual plant life cycle. Every generation, there's some seeds. They all grow up. Some of them grow up, then they flower, then they produce more seeds, and it goes once per year. Continuous one is where you don't really have a strong yearly cycle, but what you've got is a little bit of reproduction every instant with a small fraction of seeds growing up and overlapping generations. The math is harder. You get differential equations instead of these difference equation things. And some cases are, in the diploid case, some cases things get very hard to solve, that whereas in these annual plant life cycles, they're easier.
Well, which piece of statement do you think of?
Well, you do it one little slice of time at a time, and then you can figure out what the equations are. Yeah. I'm going to skip over all that and go straight on to diploids. And I'm going to... do something where I'll get you these corresponding equations, and we'll use them a certain amount. And I'm going to be erasing all these, but you'll sort of have to remember what they are. They're in the notes in any case. But there's a... I'll have to show you a little bit further kind of assumption that's being made. Because what we're going to do is assume, again, an annual plant life cycle. We'll assume parents who are reproducing. And we're going to make an assumption. Now, if they're diploid and they're crossing with each other, they're producing gametes, and the gametes are being combined, you could say, well, we'll just have two aspects of fitness. There's the probability for a newborn. We have, here's newly laid seeds, newly produced seeds, if they're a plant. And we'll have survival, I'll say viability, acting, and then you get adult survivors, and then you're going to get fertility. They'll have different fertilities. And we will, by the way, be writing life cycles like this. It's very helpful to do it, because it gives you have to specify exactly what's going on if you write sort of arrows leading from stage to stage with little names above them as to which process is acting in which order. Yeah, please.
I just had one question about these formulas. In the third to last one there, is that plus in the numerator of minus?
Here?
Yes.
No, it is not, because it's this... Wait for it. This plus. This. No, that's a minus. Yeah, it's a minus. You're quite right. That is a minus. I'm sorry, my mistake. And that's why you were able, when you factored out the PA1 minus PA, you got W big A minus W little A. Thank you. I believe it's correct in the book. If it isn't, let me know. Holler.
Now, if we do this for diploids, so we're going to say diploid, everybody's a diploid, except the gametes. Then when you produce the newborns, you produce the seeds, you're going to have different matings, because these things are outcrossing now. They're diploids. They're not clonally reproducing anymore. We're gonna have outcrossing and Mendelian rules. And we're going to have different tables of matings, of possible matings. And you'll remember, I'm going to write them all out separately here, because we might have two different sexes. And if we're doing annual plants, you have the pollen parent and the ovule parent. If you're doing, if you're in animals, a sort of egg and sperm parents. And you can write out a big table, and you go on and on and on. And they'll, according to the parents, the female parent and the male parent. And then what you're going to do is say, well, look, maybe there are different fertilities for each of these rows. Maybe viability just depends on your diploid genotype. There's only three with two alleles, there's only three diploid genotypes. But fertility could, in principle, be different for each of these. Suppose big A's are pretty fit, and heterozygous not so good, and little A worse. Well, does having two big A's, one female and one male, make you very fit? Is this, how much fitter is this than this than this? It starts to get complicated. So we're going to make a simplifying assumption. We have to make it, because if we don't make it, we're going to lose some of the Hardy Weinbergness that we need. And that is, we're going to say, if the fertility, if we made a table of three genotypes, and we said that each genotype had a viability, let's call it little v, big A, little v for the heterozygote, little v for little a, and now we're going to assign a fertility also, we'll call it F big A, F heterozygote, and F little a. And then we're going to multiply these. Now I'm going to come back to this just because I have to change this a little bit in a moment, but we're going to say, well, your fitness is, in some sense, your probability of survival times how many offspring you have, except not quite. I'll modify that in a second. If that's the case, if we say, for example, that suppose we said that big A's were twice as fertile as heterozygotes, that would imply that the fertilities of these matings would have the property that if little a, let's say if this heterozygote times heterozygote had a fertility of one, that if I replace the male by a big A, maybe it would be twice, maybe that mating would be twice as fit. If I replace the other one, the female, by a big A instead of the male, maybe also two, and here four. In other words, what I'm assuming is that the fitness of a mating is the product of the fertilities of the two individuals. And that's an arbitrary assumption. But if we make that assumption, then we can just attribute fitness to individual genotypes and not worry about all the different matings. So it's actually an assumption built in. It was pointed out by Walter Bodmer in a paper in 1965, that look, this is when we've been doing all the math on this over the years, we've been implicitly assuming this product rule. If you say, well, let's try other rules there, it'll be fine, but you go out of Hardy-Weinberg at the proper stage of the light cycle, and the life gets very hard. It gets to be a mess. Of course, you can analyze it mathematically if you want, but it gets ugly. So we have this sort of product rule for fertilities, and then we're attributing viability to the individuals. They're not surviving or not as mated pairs. They're surviving as individuals, so we can attribute viability to them. But there's one little additional problem, and that is we're also going to throw, if for the absolute fitnesses, these are absolute fitnesses, we're actually going to have to put a 1/2 in here. Why? Because we want it to be the case that when the absolute fitnesses are all one, the population shouldn't be growing. And if we don't throw that half in, then the population will grow. The half isn't important because in a moment we're going to go to relative fitnesses and then it just cancels out and goes away. But just as a matter of definition, the absolute fitnesses here, capital W, are these things. You're using the product rule for fertilities so as to simplify the issue of what all the matings fertilities are. And then we can take any one, we can make the same assumption as before, which is that population density regulation falls equally on everybody, reducing their V's or their F's, or both. If you're at high density, increasing them if you're at low density. And if you do that, it'll turn out that all the expressions for gene frequencies won't depend upon these big A's, they'll depend upon the little A's. The little W's, not the big A's, the big W's depend on the little W's. Yes, please save me.
Could you explain again why each of the frequencies is multiplied by half?
Yes. If I had suppose all the fertilities were two, basically it's because a pair of individuals, if it has two offspring, that's the point at which the population is exactly reproducing itself. So if you count fertilities when the population is just replacing itself, let all the V's be one, but now say the population is just replacing itself, that'll be the point where the F's are 2, 2, and 2. And so everybody's got fitness 2, but the population's not doubling. So if you want the population size, you have the fitnesses scaled so that the population size, when it's just replacing itself, the average absolute fitness is 1, then you've got to stick those halves in. It's a minor point. Almost everybody who teaches population genetics doesn't pay attention to it and doesn't tell anybody about it. When you sit down and you start looking at absolute fitnesses, then you discover, oh, I've got to do that if I really want to have a sensible scaling. I mention it as a footnote, really. I mean, you could do it the other way, but then you'd have the craziness that the mean absolute fitness is 2 when the population isn't doubling every generation, it's just replacing itself. But in any case, we're going to go to the relative fitnesses where the 2's, it doesn't matter if you put halves in or not, they all cancel out. And we're going to be looking at what the expressions look like in that case. And so these are, of course, the relative fitnesses. A silly conclusion has been drawn by people who forget about the distinction between absolute fitness and relative fitness. So keep in mind, it's something to keep in mind. All right, now let's go back and let's do all these formulas again. We have about 10 minutes, so I think I can do it. So I'm going to do them all in a blinding torrent of algebra, and we're going to get very similar expressions, except not exactly interpreted the same. And then we can go on to particular cases, like a recessive lethal, and we will be doing that. So let's start out with 2 alleles and 3 genotypes, and they have fitnesses which are little w's. These are relative fitnesses. And in the initial
in the newborns. So we have a generation where at the start of that generation, all the newborns have just been born, or the seeds have just been produced. Now, if these individuals have mated at random, formed up pairs, if this product rule thing holds, then it will be true that a random offspring will be equivalent to a random combination of gametes. And so you'll have the gametes produced by the males and the gametes produced by the females. We are assuming here that these relative thicknesses are the same in males and females. We're assuming this product rule thing. Then it is true that newborns are just assembled by taking a gamete produced by a random individual and a gamete produced by another random individual and putting them into a genotype. And on that genotype, selection has not yet acted. What will be the rule for what the frequencies of the three genotypes are? What rule can we apply that we know about already? So you have a pool of gametes from the females, pool of gametes from the males. Because we're assuming that their fertilities are the same, they differ by genotype, but they don't differ by sex. The male pool and the female pool will have the same frequencies of alleles. And you combine those and you get what hyphen what?
Hardy-Weinberg
proportions. So within a generation, for just a moment, there's Hardy-Weinberg proportions. Even though selection may act later and disrupt that. So there's going to be frequencies, if we take there'll be Hardy-Weinberg proportions. I haven't given myself quite enough room here. Of those. Now, I can do this two ways. I think the best way to do it is to go straight ahead and just get the gene frequency. If we then say, okay, we're going to go forward, we're going to go to adults. So there's different survivals of these things, and then we're going to go on to gametes produced by the adult, and we start counting